We'll get started today with a roll call before I do that. And star 6-9, is that right, Sarah?
Dan, can you hear us? Or hit the pop bar button. It's like you're on mute.
Looks like it should work out. Let's try it again.
Dan, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Great. Thanks, Dan. All right. I call the meeting to order. Let's do a commissioner roll call. Commissioner Davis?
Here.
Commissioner Kennedy?
Here.
Commissioner Kleinman?
Here.
Commissioner Scheer?
Here.
Commissioner Meyer?
Here.
And Commissioner West is present. Victoria, would you mind doing a staff roll call for us?
Today we have CEO Angela Petalecki, Director of Facilities, sorry, I almost said Ops. Benpack, excuse me. Director of Operations, Dylan Hegeline. Yeah. Director of Finance and Admin, Sarah Mingy. Myself, Victoria Hightower, and then Ops Specialist, Lucas Bitt.
Right. Thank you, Victoria. Good job. Let's all stand to the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Approval of an agenda, I'll ask staff and commissioners if there are any changes or if you have any changes to today's agenda that's been presented.
I don't have a formal change, but I did want to make sure I informed you that during my staff report, Harrison Earl, our air service consultant, will actually provide a comprehensive air service update rather than me providing that, so we'll do that as part of my staff report.
That'll be Harrison. Okay. Who's online?
And he's online.
Yep. Yep.
Any other changes? Okay.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve?
Yes.
Second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed, same side. Commissioner West was an aye as well. Lucas. We are going to recognize Lucas Smith today for 5 years of service. Angela, I think you're going to take it over. I think I have an envelope here as well.
So Lucas is part of our airport operations team. He actually joined us 5 years ago as part of Ben's team in facilities. And despite Ben's arguments and accurate arguments for the grass was greener instead of the fence, Lucas really wanted to work in airport operations. So he's been part of the ops team for how long now?
You're about 3.5 years now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Lucas often works evenings, and so Lucas deals with a lot of thunderstorm diversions, and he is this calm all the time. So he is like the perfect guy to have in that role. He came to us right after graduating from CMU. This is to be an environmental planner. And so he is, I think I've mentioned to the board more generally how we have, you know, a guy who likes stormwater stuff. So, hey, great, you get to work on stormwater stuff. This is that guy. So he works on our stormwater program. He's been a great addition to the team and comes out for all of our employee events. Yeah, it's very fun. Thanks for your 5 years of service.
Thank you. I hope you're able to stay another 5.
Great. And, yeah, we have just recommend for your service. He didn't even know that was coming, so we want him to stay another 5 years, so his speech is off.
Lucas, I'm a little concerned that you like stormwater.
I know, right? Same thought.
You know, we need to have one guy who does.
Yeah.
Perfect. But thank you so much, Lucas. We love having you on the team.
Victoria, do you have any citizen comments?
No registered.
All right, so we're moving on to the consent agenda. Agenda went out. Consent agenda was included last week. Are there any comments on the consent agenda? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Second. And a second. Any further discussion? Okay, all to approve the consent agenda, all vote by saying aye.
Aye.
Nay, same sign. Okay, consent agenda is approved. We have three action items on the agenda today. Colin, you're going to help kick us off, starting with the Gensler action item.
Yep. So the first item is the Gensler work authorization for design services for phase two and three of the air traffic control tower modernization project. So, as everybody probably remembers, the airport was awarded $5 million in May by the FAA for the air traffic control tower. There's some strings with that. We have to accept a grant in September, and there must be a level of completeness with the bidding process for the FAA to be pleased with the grant we're accepting. And so we worked with Gensler and SCI to put together a really quick turn schedule that we can deliver on all the expectations for this. But what we figured out to move forward with, and this is based on the application, is it's replacing the glass in the tower. That has been a problem for years. We're going to hopefully get that replaced. Roofing on levels 1 through 6, a lot of the piping and boilers and chillers in the tower, as well as air handler units. And then we're also looking at an additive alternate for a fire suppression system as well. So, big scope. Trying to accomplish a lot with this project. As I mentioned, timing is really critical, so that's why we're coming to you so quickly after this award to get Gensler started with this. This is a schedule. I'm not going to walk you through every item, but really the key date is bolded. It is September 15th. We're going to come to you asking for grant acceptance and FCI's contract so they can begin work. And so I think this timeline gives us a little bit of float, but it's fast, and so we've got everybody committed to making sure that we have this. It's really exciting. Questions, comments?
I think the only other thing I would like to add is within the AIS, we did point out this is eligible for grant funding for the design piece. We're trying to maximize as much as we can towards the construction, which we did in the last tower grant. Should we have any available once we get to the final cost estimates, we are working to make this, but follow all the FAA procedures to make it eligible. But right now, we do plan to self-fund this mostly for that timeline, but it will be an eligible expense should we have room for it. So, I wanted to call that out.
Great. Any questions, comments?
Only one question I thought I'd throw out there on the tower work. Is any beyond the infrastructure or the tower itself, are we adding any additional modernization? I know there was one part of the airport that was maybe out of view of the tower.
That's a good question. So, and you're remembering correctly, you know, there's a line of sight obstruction when you're in the cab of the tower and you're looking towards runway 422. There's an obstruction on Taxiway and Charlie where a hangar was built too high many years before I got here. So 15 years or more years ago. We're not doing anything to address that obstruction. Instead, you know, they have some modified procedures up there, and the connector taxiway has been removed right there so that, you know, just to minimize the risk, because it's only blocking the taxiway. So we won't be making any changes in that way. As far as technology goes, you know, that's really in the hands of that. They were working closely with that tech ops team. So if they want to make some improvements, they could. But right now, I think, you know, our tower is in good shape from an FAA perspective. It's the aging infrastructure that we really need to address. But the cab windows will be replaced as part of this. And so that'll be the biggest enhancement because it'll just improve the view of the control of the cab. Chime in if there's anything else.
Brian, you covered other than the FAA, I can't speak a whole lot to it, but I know the FAA is currently doing a voice switch upgrade for that tower. So there's a bunch of FAA tech ops folks pulling wires, putting the equipment in.
So that's where I think, along with us, you know, we really encourage and try to provide opportunities for the FAA to make upgrades while we're upgrading. We've done that countless times on our runway replacement program. But it's not, I kind of think of things, you know, in terms of like what we have to have control over and what we can just make sure they have the right information so that they make those improvements that make sense while we're changing things as well. But this one's very HVAC heavy and window replacement is most almost glamour size of projects, you know.
If you just mentioned we would self-fund this up to the point of applying for the grant funds, and the likelihood of getting grant funds is high.
I mean, the likelihood of getting the full $5 million is—it's already been announced and awarded. I think it's what we're trying to do is we're trying to make the construction cost equal $5 million. But if we end up with a little bit less than that, we would pick up some of this grant. If we pick up a little bit more than that, then we would pay for the full $369 ourselves.
Okay.
We think that is the most value for us to pay for it. Just wanted to point out it's eligible should we have room.
And the bucket of funding that we've received our grant awards for the power from, you know, it's at the end of, you know, the eligibility. There's a lot of talk right now in Congress of whether they're going to use unspent funds when it comes to that. But right now, there are no plans to issue another notification of funding opportunity to apply for more grant funding. And so our team is really focused on what is the work that we need to get done to feel confident that our tower is in good shape for another decade. We have that kind of four-phase plan that we came up with to extend the life of the tower 20 years. You know, the total cost of that was over $10 million, but you know, getting to invest $6.5 million through these grants and a little bit of funding we've chipped in, that we think addresses the most urgent problems. And so it's really focused on that. Like, hey, if we don't get any more money for a while, what do we need to, what is the highest priority?
Good.
One comment. We're like down to our last week of nights on the last year funding of power. So we're at the process of wrapping that up. Access to the very high roof is significantly safer than the 65-foot wall with wire that's not attached. It's up there now. So if you get up there, the air conditioning is significantly better up in the top tower. So we'll be talking to the floors today. There's the gas. We've got a little bit of night work left. This particular project will be days and nights because there's sections of it. You take out the glass, the cabin roof, and everything else there. So thank you for our coordination.
And this is Lance Kramer, by the way. This is Lance works for FCI. He oversees all the projects here at the airport. There's another project manager as well, Sam, that I think sometimes interacts with the board as well. But, it's a collaborative effort to figure out what exactly we want to do, and kind of planning a $5 million project is the point when it comes to, hey, it's easier if we can just self-fund it. It's also we can design it faster so that we can hit all those grant timeline milestones that they need us to hit.
Great. If there's nothing further, I'll entertain a motion for action item A.
This needs to be read.
Is this?
Let's see. I move to approve Genzo work authorization number 018 in the amount of $369,800 plus reimbursable expenses not to exceed $5,500 for the design, construction, documentation, and bidding permitting related to the next phase of ATCT improvements, and authorize CEO to sign the agreement.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Kleinman. Do I have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? This is not a call out.
It's
not
a roll call.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Okay, hearing none, motion passes. And Colin again, item B.
Okay, next item is the FCI construction contract for the rental car roof and RTU replacement, valued at $640,000. So this project highlights it really replaces four RTUs. Those are in the area shown as red, the red outline over the rental car areas, as well as a portion of the roof and curbside roof in those areas shown in blue. This is anticipated to be funded with a split between restricted CFC funds. So anytime you're in a car, there's a fee associated with it. And it can really only be spent for rental car purposes. And so this is the airport utilizing those funds, as well as some airport revenue funds for the other half. I don't have a ton on this other than this is overdue work that Ben's been wanting to get done for a long time, and we've got FCI lined up to do it upon approval.
speak to the age of it. I know before our RTUs that are up there, they're about 24 years old, one of which is above the location the PD's working in currently. It is to the point we can't take below 72 degrees, or it freezes up. So we're having a lot of problems with that aging equipment, and that roof was done at that same time. So they're both end of life and just time to replace.
And part of why we had kind of stalled on this is we wanted to get through that conceptual design for the terminal to make sure that we weren't replacing roof or without replacing HVAC. But now that we have the conceptual design done, we're confident that, that this is a project that makes sense because it's still in the phase one design.
Good. Mr. Chair, I'll just stay in for this one.
Just a quick question, just to understand our history. Why is that section so compartmentalized? You know, it just seems like these are kind of like their own little world over there.
We've kind of just replaced the roof and the phases.
Okay.
We do this, the only other roof we haven't replaced recently will be in the upper order. And we compartmentalized some of this by color up there with the red and blue. Red being over the rental cars.
Okay.
So we can identify what percentage was about getting CFC dollars.
And is the blue just covered area? It's not interior building?
So like along the curb have a little bit of interior building. So it goes over the vestibules.
Okay.
And then that larger square at the bottom right where the cursor is, that's above ATO1 and maybe part of a little bit of ATO1.
Like the first section that they've done, probably the first third.
Okay. I think it's almost if you draw this line kind of down in this area, most of it's that exterior curb.
Yeah.
Okay.
That you're seeing it just out there.
Okay. And I think, I mean, when you think about the volume of space in the main terminal, mm-hmm. I think that makes the compartmentalization make more sense because you know, you have like much more traditional 8-foot drop ceilings in the internal car offices, and then you have this open atrium with this, you know, tier roof line, and so, you know, these roofs all interact with each other, and then the other ones are almost completely independent.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
One quick question: it's not probably germane to the boat itself, but just as far as doing that work and mentioning the drop ceilings and whatnot, are we going to have to shut down, like that area inside while that work? Work is being done.
I'm not aware of this shutting down anything. Lance can probably speak a little more to it. We'll probably have to provide like some kind of heating crew and kind of
really we'll only take off what kind of air you're running in the day to the work and each and every night. And then for the air handling units, there'll be blue crane fixed up so that we were taking out air handling one day, raising the curb that day, drying the roof back in, and the next day you're shutting in the back to the station. There will be a quantity of different crane fixed that last week. The time for the plan to do this fall and the temperatures aren't too hot or too cold last night. Kind of October to year hanging inside.
Probably the only like area that we would block off that passengers would see an impact would be right up there curbside. We'll have sound like a debris trailer for the removal of that'll be pit stop and
the team's been planning the pacing very well. And just thinking about the operational impact and the impact to customers. And you know, this is another project where you know it does have some impact to curbside capacity and things, and you know, it's a little bit of a pain in the butt, so we want to knock it out. We need to, and we definitely don't want to do it next year when we anticipate even higher passenger volume.
There's no temporary relocation for just trying to understand these fall under kind of a master contract with FCI as a contractor.
Yes.
What drives those differences in their overhead in these different contracts?
Their overhead costs?
Yeah, just looking at their budget, like I see this one's 7% overhead cost, the next one's 5%. I'm just curious what drives that.
I don't mind answering. That's part of the on-call agreement. We were asked to buy tiers of pricing that's out there. And smaller jobs have a higher overhead percentage as it relates because of the volume that's out there.
So contracts
are approaching our response. And so when contracts get to the X amount, and the fee percentage goes down, that process overhead is less.
Okay.
At that point in time, that falls down. So some of these projects are smaller, this one being less than $10, but it's more higher
things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do I have a motion for action item B?
Yes. I move that we, excuse me, move to reauthorize the chief executive officer to execute a task order with FCI under the on-call general contractor contract for the roof over the curbside area and rental car offices and the RTUs over the rental car offices up to a maximum project cost of $640,000.
Second. Thank you, Commissioner Davis. Thank you, Commissioner Kennedy. Any further discussion? All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Call the last one.
Okay. Final action item is the FCI construction contract for the terminal amenities project. So Dan hates the name terminal amenities. We've been sending emails back and forth about it because it makes it sound like it's a one-two, and really a lot of these items are required at commercial service airports, although some are optional for non-hubs, but still we feel like they're very common and needed. So the items in question that we're talking about here are pet relief room, mother's room, family restroom with adult changing table. There's some exit lane breach control technology, and then modernization of existing elevators will be in this package. Originally, we had looked at escalators as well. We deferred that due to space limitations and passenger impacts. We have an opportunity to do that once the counters are moved in a future phase. So the total for this is 3.326. million, and of that we estimate, I think the number was 24% would be authority funded, and the remainder we believe would be eligible. There's a big long AIP handbook that defines which of those things are and aren't eligible. But that's the calculation that we believe would be made. We still need to confirm that with the FAA approximately.
Timeline goes out to spring of next year.
Yes. Could you go back on? Yeah, good question. So the items on top, the mother's room, basically everything but the modernization of the elevators will happen planned by Thanksgiving. The elevators are going to be April 27th. Just they have really long lead items for a lot of parts.
The other thing too is more of the modernized elevators, we've taken them out of service. And so the holidays tend to be a really high use time. And whereas, you know, when you get into January, February travel, it tends to be very business travel heavy. And, you know, there just tends to be less usage of the elevators. And we also have lower passenger volumes. So, you know, it all kind of works out to where we'll modernize one and then move, modernize the other one, and then be done. All modernization should be done by the 1st of April. Which is important to us. That's when our passenger traffic is really starting to ramp up, and that's also, you know, April 4th is when Aspen Airport closes, and so we expect to step in some traffic.
Can you talk a little bit about the contract with this one also? So again, we're contracting with FCI, but that number that we're still working through a little bit, hence maybe the reason for the contingency, or is that contingency for other stuff?
Very good question. I heard
that precision of the number two.
So the contingency on this one is really from a timeline perspective, so we can get the amenities. I'm using words that we don't like here. So we can get some of those elements that are within the secure area completed by that Thanksgiving traffic. And in order to get through the approval from the FAA, Lance and the FBI team have given us a preliminary estimate, but they're still clarifying a few things with the designer that would impact some of those bids. So like there's specific details maybe in the construction documents that were unclear, so we have sort of a hold. We're really hoping that 20% contingency is higher than what's needed, but since we need to go through and clarify those bid items as well as go through the FAA review, we just have a couple of steps left, but that's what we were asking for, this pre-authorization, so it could contract, it will not increase above that, this is the maximum price it could be without coming back to the board. But that's really why that's in there, is that finalization of detail.
So it's really for FCI's contract.
Exactly.
But the contract will be a max price deal once it's finalized and executed.
Yeah. Yeah, with the FAA-funded projects, they have, they really want that max lump sum contract value versus a lot of our other ones. We will adjust up or down through a contingency that's held by the contractor based on those actual amounts. The FAA does not allow for a contingency to be drawn upon. So we really want to help Lance and his team be closer on those items because we don't have that contingency element where we can kind of flex into or out of. With the FAA, we have to be that gross maximum price is that lump sum firm amount with the FAA.
So not all the bids, you know, that means that we don't have final bid pricing. And the reason we wanted to bring this to the board today is because we anticipate and certainly hope that we'll have everything wrapped up and want to be able to sign the contract before our July board meeting. But we still have details that we are working out to ensure that we have a contract that we feel confident reflects the work that needs to be done, because like Kara alluded to, it is a big pain in the butt if we need to make any changes on a CMAR agreement that is funded by a grant.
I mean, just trying to understand maybe the contract in terms of missing this, but like on, just trying to tie it back, like, am I looking at, like on page 2, under general requirements, it talks about the bond pricing on the deal, and it says the 1% for the payment performance bond. But then like in the budget, I look at it and I'm like, well, that looks like 0.64%. It just didn't quite tie together. Am I missing something on that, or?
I'll have to go back and look at that and look like, you know.
That's what the bond percentage is at.
At 0.64?
Yeah, that's what it's at.
Seem like the narrative was maybe
in the narrative it missed it and had a 1%.
Anyway,
I can make sure and clarify that within the final language for sure.
So also just to add a little more clarity, I think everybody said it at this point, but really what we're doing is creating a max price that we can pre-authorize, and then over the next few weeks the plan is that the Gensler and the SCI team are going to finalize pricing. We have to bring that back to the FAA as part of the process to clear that goalpost too. And once that's done, that's the agreement Angel would actually sign is a confirmed final pricing. And I think everybody said that, but it's not
clear. We think we're pretty close. I mean, hopefully the 20% is giving you extra cushion, so we don't have to go.
Exactly.
Of these amenities, what? Which ones are inside the secure and which ones are not?
So all of those under the post security, the pet relief, mother's room, family restroom, and then actually not really within. Really the elevator modernization is the only thing outside of it. Okay. And I want to say we looked at it with Rebecca about how many extra square footage we actually gain on the secure side. And I'm sure I'm going to say the wrong one. I want to say it was about 2,400 square feet between the restroom. They're kind of highlighted in blue. They're a little bit
harder. Yeah, just, it's so tiny. So what's on the far left of that that's in blue? Yeah.
So on the far left, this is the pet relief in the mother's room. The exit door today, and I'm sorry, I'm trying to zoom in. The exit lane today, if you can kind of see where my mouse is drawn across, goes right here. The exit lane technology is the image that Rebecca included. Actually, these will go the other direction. These two lines that are running parallel to this, they will actually go this direction. And then we will have a storage room kind of over in this area. But really, then all of this area gets absorbed into that secure area. It's a little bit out of the way, but in the future expansion, they will have doors accessing into this area. So they're really in their final spot, too. We're not building something we're going to have to rip up when we do that next phase of expansion. They will tie in really nicely. They will be in sort of a weird spot right now, but they're not frequently used items. So it didn't take up existing footprint today, but it still added those amenities.
Yeah, I mean, those are amenities where people who need them seek them out. And so while the signage will be updated, and it'll be easy to find them. But in the future, when we expand the terminal, these will act, you know, there's a corridor here, so no, this is really small. There's a corridor here, and, you know, there's a nursing mother's room and a pet relief area. The terminal expansion expands the building footprint to be over here, and so these will actually just, they will face the boarding area. There will no longer be a hallway to get to them in the expanded configuration.
I'm kind of sort of zooming in. So yeah, this blew up in this area, that new restroom, which is for the families, which will be right next to the existing one too, co-located, so that made a lot of sense to us as well.
And that space is not really used for anything right now.
Correct.
It's, you know, when you're in the boarding area, and you're kind of facing that pre-class wall, it's where we have like the big black kind of cover, if you will. So we're excited to activate that space, and that's what this really feels like, is we're able to pull, we're able to activate space that isn't used today and pull some square footage into the secure area, which is really, really nice. I want to note too that, you know, some of the grant funding that we're using, well, all the grant funding that we're using has kind of used by date, entitlement grant funding, but, you know, you don't have infinity time to use it. And so that's part of why we want to do this project now too. These are amenities that we think make sense. They're needed from a compliance perspective. Some of them are needed, but from a guest experience, they're really needed. Plus they're eligible. These are projects we would do anyway as part of our terminal expansion, and they're eligible for this grant funding. So it kind of is the best of all worlds, because we're able to, you know, have these amenities before we have our full terminal expansion. We're able to make sure that none of our grant funding goes stagnant, and, you know, bring these amenities to our guests. Good.
So just quickly on the family restroom adult changing table, great amenity. So glad we're doing that. I know our mall has a very nice setup as far as like a powered lift table and some other things. So if you need something to look at, like, they have a very, very nice facility there. Also, the Center for Independence here in Grand Junction at it's on Gunnison. I think David Nelson's still the director. It's a really, they would be a great partner, at least to have a conversation about the design of that, just to have that conversation.
So. Thank you. And, you know, we've been working on the name. We don't have to make final decisions on the name of that restroom, but at Center for it's called the Universal Restroom. We don't love that term. We're leaning towards a family restroom with an adult changing table, but since most of us are parents and, you know, most of us travel with kids, you know, we all could kind of think through, and as we've gone through the design of this, really give our input on, hey, like, where's the chair where I just, like, put it down and strap my kid to it, mm-hmm. Well, this one's by the bathroom, or I'm doing this. And so we've really hit high score on amenities in there. Some of them can't be used simultaneously, but we decided if you have a toddler needs to be strapped down, chances are you're not also using the adult changing table at the same time while someone's using the tiny little toilet. You know, that feels like too much on your own. So just want you to know that we've put a lot of thought into that. And so that's a great suggestion to make sure that as we put the finishing that meets as many needs as possible. It's really been wonderful.
Great. The authority is going to cover roughly 24% of the cost, looks like.
Yeah, and that'll be finalized with the FAA. The main piece of that that's not eligible is that exit lane technology that has to do with TSA funding, but we really want to get ahead of it too, because right now that is staffed with a TSA employee. Should that funding go away, the airport would have to come up with some alternative to protect that. So the technology is the most common way that that's being done in most airports right now.
Does that dollar amount jive with our current capital improvement budget?
Yes, it does. I think that the final cost on this has come in a little bit higher within the grant project itself, as we've sort of added and flexed the items, but it's really close, especially with our portion.
And, you know, as we're looking, you know, it's mid-year, right, so we're looking at our budget now and our future budget, because of the timing of some of these too, like, elevator modernization is going to be in our 2020
budget. It's
going to
be next year.
Yeah, exactly.
Any further questions, comments?
Mr. Chair, I'll abstain from this one.
Okay. I will entertain a motion for action item C.
Motion to authorize the Chief Executive Officer to execute a task order with FCI under the on-call general contractor contract for the terminal amenities project up to a maximum project cost of $3,326,000, including a 20% ownership contingency.
Thank you, Commissioner Davis. I have a second.
Second.
Deputy Commissioner Kenyon. Any further discussion? Any all in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Okay, thank you all. I think we're on to staff reports. And we want to get it started.
Yes, I will be quick, and then, as I mentioned at the beginning, Harrison Earl is online, assuming we're all squared away, so I only have a few things to mention. So first, wanted to recognize our ops team and a huge accomplishment from last month. We had our annual Part 139 FAA cert inspection, and for the first time in my time here, but in, you know, really, I think in decades, we had a discrepancy-free inspection, which means they didn't have any findings. It's really unusual, and completely acceptable, frankly, to have a few small findings that you get cleaned up. We had none, so wanted to recognize our team.
Congrats.
Yeah, good work.
Last week, I want to make sure the board knows, just because there's been different stuff in the news, and, you know, wanted to recognize the team for their work hosting several VIPs last week. So RFK Jr. came through the airport flying commercially for his visit. You know, we had the Interior Secretary here, Deion Sanders, flew through the airport. It was a busy week at the airport, and our team did a really good job. So just wanted to recognize them. The Interior Secretary was here for several reasons, but one of them was actually to visit the DLM building that's being constructed. So Tommy Hayes, the manager there, who you've met multiple times, he's really excited. They're on track for it to open in July. Obviously, they're busy right now with everything going on, and he wanted me to let the board know that despite the building not being done, they're still operating at full capacity. You know, they're just using their space in different ways, but they're planning a ribbon cutting ceremony that the board will be invited to. It looks like right now that's targeted for late July, but the building should be open before then.
He complimented our airport and another meeting on involved.
Oh, that's nice. Not surprising either. He's a great guy and such a good leader over there. Our community's lucky to have him. And to use his words, he's in his dream job because he's a really kid. So he's worked in wildland firefighting his whole career and finally got to come back home to lead this group. Last week at the Colorado Aeronautical Board, the board approved our SIE loan application. And so there's two more steps. It needs to be approved by the Transportation Commission because the Aeronautics Division is actually transferring money over from the roadway fund into the aeronautics fund and kind of combining funds since it's a landside project and for parking and roadway improvements, it's eligible. They did that last time as well. So that's scheduled for, I think, this week. And then the final loan committee review, which is a state committee that reviews all the loans, just to make sure that the, you know, really to you know, look at it from a Dan Meyer perspective, make sure that this loan feels like a good financial idea. That is expected next week, so we should have our loan fully executed in June. Or that, and again, that's a loan that funds the remaining portions of our terminal parking lot improvements, as well as some of the future plans. Last week, I went to Chicago and met with seven airlines at the Jumpstart Air Service Conference. The mood was surprisingly optimistic, and, you know, I'm teaming up Harrison right now. But given the cost of oil, we were prepared for a pretty dim mood, and the fact, you know, the Spirit situation and that. But they were optimistic, and so we had a lot of productive meetings. And Harrison will have more to say in his update. Then the last one I wanted to just give you a verbal update on, but, you know, there should be information and action coming to the board in future months on this. We've been working with our concession partner, Tailwind, really for about 8 years on how they can sell locally produced wine and spirits, because when you think about something that people really enjoy when they come and visit, or something people would love to be able to take with them on business trips, you know, that is one of them, and it's very hard to travel with, right? You can't take it through TSA. Good luck. I mean, you can pray that it makes it through in your checked bag, I guess, or you can pay a lot to ship it. And so they have been working through, you know, the state rules and liquor license. Our liquor license actually is our whole boarding area. And so it's tricky when you're trying to have multiple liquor licenses. Now you want a liquor license to sell, you know, sell packaged liquor that won't be consumed. But they've made a lot of progress, and so I'm optimistic. Right now, what they would like to do is they would actually like to kind of repurpose a portion of their gift shop, have a separate door, kind of wall it off, and turn that into a liquor store. Still have a gift shop. The gift shop is oversized, objectively. I mean, like, when you look at the inventory and how fast it moves, they don't need as much space as they have, and so really repurposing that space. So just wanted to let you know that they really pick up speed on that. I'm really excited. I think it's a great amenity for guests, and I think it's a learning opportunity as well. So more to come on that.
Okay, great.
All right, and now I'll kick it off to Harrison so he can give an air service update.
Welcome, Harrison.
Well, thank you. Good afternoon, Commissioner. I'm going to do my best to give kind of a start really high level with what we're seeing in the industry. We'll zoom in a little bit in the Grand Junction of Western Colorado. Please interrupt me as we go with any questions. I'll admit it's a little hard to hear, so if I miss the question, someone just speak up close to a mic and I will pause. Angela teased this already, but fuel costs are obviously really high and causing lots of challenges for us, to say the least. This is as of what we saw last week from the U.S. Energy Administration. The jet fuel spot price, this is Gulf Coast, was at $3.49, so that's up 86% from where it started the year. On the plus side, that's a lot better than the 136% up it was at the peak at $4.45. But I do want to point out that, you know, this is still really, jet fuel is divorced right now from what we're seeing in crude prices. So crude prices today are down 6 or 7%. They're at 32% higher than the beginning of the year. Obviously, jet fuel at 86%, quite a bit higher. So we're seeing some weirdness in the refining markets, partly because a lot of our jet fuel is imported still. So we're really optimistic and hopeful that this starts coming down as crude does. Certainly, as oil gets moving again, that would be great. But this is a massive impact for now. Delta told us they expect to spend $2 billion extra just in this quarter. And for context, they need $2 billion in the same quarter last year. So absent other changes, that fuel bill completely wipes out profit. Luckily, however, we're making other changes. And so what we see on the demand side is that demand is incredibly strong. These are just two quotes from the last couple of weeks, just to kind of indicate what we're seeing with Alaska CFO talking about very strong corporate demand. And Bob Jordan, who does not put things nicely into a single quote, but, you know, in the context here is talking about the fare increases he's seen over the months leading up to this, that there's really been no drop off in demand. Obviously, economics 101, what we've seen historically in the industry would suggest demand falls off dramatically as fares rise. We're not there right now. Demand is incredibly robust, and it really, I think there's a sense that the industry has misunderstood some of the elasticity. And that we really haven't figured out what that new inflection point is. And that's a positive in this current fuel environment. It is less positive for travelers who are obviously paying those prices. We're seeing overall that airlines are really, I'd say, evolving right now, really kind of diversifying what their business is, or in the case of someone like Spirit, just failing outright. So United and Delta, this is not a new trend, this is not this year. They're certainly embracing premium. They continue going for the high-income consumers. Business class extra legroom is kind of the table stakes for them. We've seen Southwest move that on that direction in kind of their own Southwest way. So no first class yet, but assigned seats, bag fees. Those three carriers are likely to be the bulk of profit this year across the industry. They're doing incredibly well. United and Delta really are the leaders here. Southwest is catching up quickly. We did see our first little hint of consolidation with Allegiant merging with Sun Country. That closed a couple of weeks ago. We'll expect to see kind of what that means for their networks. It's a little early there. And then obviously we teased this at the beginning, but we did see our first airline failure of significant size since 2008, which was Spirit. They've obviously been struggling for a very long time. They were in their second Chapter 11 of the last couple of years. Fuel prices really is what kind of pushed them over the edge, but it wasn't the cause of their problems. They had long-standing systemic problems on demand and product, and the fuel prices just made it unsustainable. If we zoom out a bit and really, I think, go back in time here, I think this is an interesting view from one of the airline trade groups of what we've seen, you know, going back 40 years in the industry. And what you see is, over time, the role of the global network carriers, and so today those are American, Delta, United, obviously go back over time, there were a lot more of them at one point. They've shifted from really being the peak, being the majority and super majority of travel to just around 50% of the business. Low-cost network carriers, that's really Alaska and Hawaii, not dramatically. Our low-cost carriers, so that's primarily Southwest, really peaked after the 2008 financial crisis, and then within the last couple of years, last decade really, we've seen the ultra-low-cost carriers pick up more and more and more significant share, and that's the Frontier Spirits of the world. We're now seeing those low-cost carriers stall a little bit on the growth side. We're seeing the legacies come back, and these are marginal gains right now, but it is notable that the first time we're starting to eat some of that now, and this is before fuel prices picked up. So we are seeing a little bit of a realignment in the industry, but really what I think it means is we're less likely to see just this dramatic ongoing growth of the lower cost carriers. We're likely to see them be a little bit more status quo going forward. That said, they've had an enormous dip in the industry in terms of the size of aircraft that are flying. So again, go back 20 years.
Downloading apps.
50 or fewer seat aircraft, that's down to 12 this year. And so those are our CRJ200s or the CRJ550s. That kind of 51 to 100 really picked up dramatically. That's the E75 that we see a lot here. And I think what's notable is just that 151 plus. That is, you know, depending on the airline, A320, 21, 737, 800, 900. Those just weren't a factor. You go back 15, 20 years, and now they are the bulk of the industry. And this is really hurting a lot of small communities that can't fill up those planes. There are obviously a lot of seats to fill. We've done incredibly well doing that. You know, we're seeing these mainline aircraft. United's bringing them into the market regularly. We see them with Breeze a little bit below the 150 mark. They're in the high 130s, but still, we're seeing really good results in Grand Junction. And if we look at that capacity, you've seen this graph before on the capacity side, but it's another really strong year for us, looking at all of these trends together. First and second quarter, we're setting capacity records once again. I don't think there's much of a change since you last saw this a couple months ago. Third quarter right now is just barely below our record, and that was a 2021 where, you know, we really had that aberration of capacity in a post-pandemic world. Fourth quarter right now is showing down 6% from last year. That is unlikely to stay that far down. We'll talk about why in just a moment, but I'd say overall looking really positive right now, and still definitely a growth year for us. That was seat capacity. On the volume side, we continue to see really strong passenger volume through our checkpoints. So this is our most up-to-date view of what's happening at the airport. So this is as of 2 days ago. We were 12% above last year, 25% above 2024, and that's been relatively consistent. You know, it looks like a little bit in May, we got a little bit closer to last year. We kind of, that gap closed a little bit, but that's partly because last year had really strong capacity as well. We're still maintaining above. And remember, that's with these fuel price increases, that's with everything else going on in the world. This is a great position for us to be in, and one we should be really happy with from a just broad standpoint. What's behind this growth right now? It's largely American. So American is, you know, I think we've talked about them a little bit less because they're not necessarily adding a ton of flights, but they are marginally improving across the board. We expect to see both Dallas and Phoenix at 3 through the end of July. DFW is actually going to get 4 flights in September, which we're really excited about to see that in there. We met with American last week. They reaffirmed that they're excited about that as well. We do see a slight reduction in Phoenix in August and September. That is a Phoenix hub thing that has nothing to do with our performance. Nobody wants to be in Phoenix in August and September. It's a little warm down there, to say the least. And so the overall hub shrinks. We come right back in October when things get a little bit more temperate there. For United, you see that 14% up in the third quarter. That's because we have those 7 daily flights, 2 main lines. We're thrilled about this. This gives us great coverage in Denver. And I believe you saw the schedule a month or two ago, so you saw that it makes our day trip easier in both directions. That 7th flight is only in the schedule through the end of October. United just hasn't finalized November, December yet. We fully expect that flight to stick around. And so that fourth quarter of down 5% right now doesn't reflect. Orange County after August 17th. This is due to some slot allocation issues in Orange County. It's a very slot-controlled airport, and they unfortunately had to shrink down in the back half of the year. We were a strong performer. We were profitable. We had strong load factors, but we were the least profitable of any of their routes, and unfortunately, we were the ones who got cut out of that. Luckily, we keep Las Vegas in the market. We keep Breeze Cruise in Orange County. We did meet with the Breeze team last week. They're still very excited about our market. They're looking at other growth opportunities and certainly want to get back into Orange County as soon as the slots allow them to. And then on the Delta side, I don't think this is a surprise. We've talked about this for a while. We're 12 weekly flights through the summer. Once we get into November, that drops back down to one. Given the fuel situation, and that is a horribly inefficient aircraft, it's certainly possible we drop down to one earlier this year than we had planned to. That's still a little TBD, but it would not shock me if we see that push up a little bit. Where we sit in the broader industry, I'm sorry, the broader region here, so this is June, this is our current capacity. We are the only airport in the region with four airlines. We have phenomenal routes, and we love this stat. Angela caught this yesterday, that we have more flights than our competitors in Eagle, Montrose, and Moab combined this summer. So really happy about that. We're still up 11%. We've got really strong capacity. It looks good for us. And this continues into October as well. You can see Orange County comes off there, but we still have more daily flights than Eagle, Montrose, and Hayden this time around. Combined, really changing up the airport there because we don't have the full schedule in Moab yet. They haven't published it entirely. They're essential air service. They are a little bit closer in, and they are going to be transitioning around that time from Contour to SkyWest. So we're not entirely sure what that looks like, but it should be pretty darn similar. Again, really happy with this. Notice we're down 1%, but you know, effectively flat. And again, that is likely to change a little bit as we get into October, because those schedules are totally like that. Do just want to pause really quickly. I'm going to go into our catchment data, just kind of talk through things. I'll do so relatively quick, but are there any questions about any of that before I do that?
Any questions for Harrison so far? None here. Keep going, Harrison.
All right, so looking at our catchment data here, as you recall, we look at our catchment data to capture travelers that are using any airport. So we look at travelers in Mesa County, we look at whether they use Grand Junction or Montrose, Eagle, Denver, Salt Lake, any of the airports in the region, and so we're capturing the total volume. And I love this map here because it just helps us understand regionally where people are going from the area. And I think it really just highlights, you know, our folks are traveling to California, Texas. You see a decent amount in places like Illinois, New York, Florida pops out from there, and helps us understand where we may be having great coverage today, including connecting flights, and where we may be lacking a little bit. As Angela said, we did meet with, I think, seven airlines at Jumpstart last week. They were all pretty optimistic about growth. That's not to say anything is imminent, but I think we were expecting things to be very pessimistic, be hearing about a lot of cuts. And airlines were pretty optimistic about air service, air demand generally, and actually pretty happy with where Grand Junction falls into that. You know, we share a lot of stats about the community. We certainly share this information about our passenger trends. I would say airlines generally see us as a bright spot right now. And do just want to highlight, again, nothing imminent here, but we did submit a small community air service development grant, or SCASD application, in May for nonstop service to Houston. This is certainly something that's been on our radar for a long time. Those SCASD grants allow us, if we are selected and awarded, to get some funding from the Department of Transportation that we would combine with some of the local funding from the Air Service Alliance to support nonstop service to Houston. United wrote us a letter of support. This is certainly something that's on their radar. They're excited about the long term. Lots of steps before we get there, but again, I'd say pretty optimistic that that's something that is in our relative near term, you know, 1 to 2 years. Excuse me. Looking at our catchment data overall, this is our long 10-year trend. I recognize this is hard to read and doesn't show much, but I do think it's notable other airports has been relatively consistent outside the first quarter. Our next point is to zoom in on this because this is actually makes it readable for the last couple of years. And so you can really see again, we're not seeing anything terribly different. First quarter was ever so slightly lower demand than it was in the past years. Our leakage actually came down as a percentage ever so slightly. I think it was like 33% down to 31%. None of that really suggests that this is a new trend, but do think it's notable just that we continue to be really successful at having low leakage outside of ski season, and even in ski season, we're doing dramatically better than we were pre-pandemic. And then last for me here, we talk a lot about our top markets. This again is our catchment area, so this is anyone in Mesa County. We've got nonstop service to six of those top 20 today. We talked with airlines, at least in passing, about every other market in the top 10 and several in the 11-20 range here. I have nothing imminent there other than to say, you know, we see there's still some good potential here across multiple airlines for growth. We really are focused on how we can not only cover some of these top nonstops, but add hub connectivity. That's certainly what you see when we talk about Houston, just knowing what that gives us in terms of accessibility and connectivity to the country. So that's what I've got for today. I appreciate the time and really happy to talk to any questions anyone has.
I have a question on this slide that surprises me that Atlanta is not on these metro areas.
I'd say Atlanta's not, but there's a couple things that are a little surprising. So we've talked about, I'm actually surprised Portland's not on this list. Portland's number 22, so it's just off the side. Atlanta's not part of it, it's right up there. Remember though that Atlanta's role in kind of the national airspace is that it's a connecting hub. And so, you know, it doesn't mean that we don't have a strong case for it. It just means it would maybe be more connecting. So, you know, I'll just talk about it in the context of Houston, just as an example here. You know, Houston's at 15 passengers per day each way. I should have defined my acronym of PD there, but that's passengers per day each way. And when we talk to United, we expect that 15 to be supplemented by people connecting to Austin, into places like Boston, San Antonio, throughout Florida. And that's what makes that route work. The 15 is really helpful. But when we're talking about a massive hub like in Houston or in Atlanta, for that matter, the connections actually matter more. I would say when we talk to Delta, Atlanta is probably not the, you know, our number one priority with them right now, but it's certainly on the radar in the long term.
I had another question. We showed us the slides of the low-cost airlines versus the full airlines and all that. With Southwest's business model change, are they going to change categories?
So I would tell you that slide comes from John Heimlich, who's the chief economist at Airlines for America. And I think if Southwest tells him as a member to change them, I think they would. But you know, in the current moment, Southwest is still lower cost. And remember, cost does not mean ticket price. It means literally what are the costs that you have paying your employees, the efficiencies, everything else. I think there's a reasonable chance that in the next 5 or 7 years, we're going to see Southwest enter into long-haul markets. They're going to look more like a legacy carrier. We could see smaller aircraft. And yeah, they would look more like either a lower-cost network or a global network carrier in general. But we're certainly not there yet, at least in my opinion.
Thank you for clarifying the difference between low cost and low price, because I think that's very confusing on the consumer side of it.
It is, and I do think it's really notable here. You know, if we go back, I don't have a slide on fares here, but you know, historically there's been a dramatic fare difference between Grand Junction, you know, Denver, even Montrose with Southwest. And there's still a fair difference on the number of routes, but that difference is shrinking dramatically as those low-cost carriers just are less priced. They're less distinct than they used to be. And so I do think that's a really important concept, and I appreciate you flagging it.
Thank you.
Any other questions or discussion? Okay, Harrison, thank you so much. Your deep knowledge and understanding is very much appreciated, and thank you for walking us through a very informative presentation.
Thank you all very much. And here's the slides, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer anything.
Okay.
The only thing I'll add is that I ask Harrison all of my random questions all the time. So we've worked together for almost 15 years, and you know, I get, whenever I have kind of these random, like, why is this working this way, or what about this, I get to just ask them. As you guys get questions from your friends, family, the community, as you have those thoughts yourself, feel free to reach out to me, and I'm happy to, you know, give them answers, because I'm a naturally curious person, and I want to know, once you have a question, I have a question, I want to know the answer to it, so.
I'm curious as to how the data, like that last slide, how does that influence San Diego, for example, kind of seem to be highly visited. We don't have a direct flight to San Diego. How does that influence our discussions with the airlines?
You know, it matters a lot, especially when we talk about, like, you know, San Diego is a good example. San Diego is not really a primary connecting hub, right? Yeah. San Diego only had one runway, number one. So they're just restricted. But I mean, that demand to and from, the airlines care about that because, you know, they want to make sure they're offering, especially the network carriers, they want to make sure they're offering a robust network. For an ultra-low-cost carrier like a Breeze here, they care about that because if there's demand for them to stand on already, then that means that they can also stimulate more demand with low fares and on-top service. And so this is one of the very most important things to the airlines is, you know, what are you seeing? They have access to some of that themselves, but especially for a market like Grand Junction that's smaller. As you can imagine, they're not spending much time overanalyzing Grand Junction to see how they can squeeze out a little bit more. You know, profit or other variables to achieve their strategic goals, but we can, and we can make it easy for them. And so that's really what we do, but I think this is really important. Harrison, anything to add?
No, I think you've really captured it there, Angela, and, you know, and if we were going to go to a specific airline about San Diego, we would obviously show them a lot more. We'd show them what the surrounding region generates. We'd show them trends over time. We'd show them fares. But we start with this, and it's also, as Angela noted, it's important to recognize who your target is. So we're not going to go talk to United or American, these network hubs, who network carriers who don't have a hub in a market like San Diego, about that. We're going to talk to the airlines that are more likely to serve it. You know, we share a certain level of detail with all of them because it's really valuable to understand, you know, San Diego would feed well over Phoenix, over Salt Lake, obviously today, over other future hubs, but so we do try to target the message pretty specifically.
Another thing that we talk a lot about with the airlines is migration data. So, you know, the state demographer's office, obviously, they produce a lot of really good information. But, I mean, airlines want to invest in something that works now and in the future. And so, you know, migration patterns really influence air service. And so, you know, the migration patterns from Colorado are fascinating, you know, for us. We talk about the migration with them, and then we have to qualify it because we actually have very little out-of-state migration in the Grand Junction. But, you know, when we zoom out, we talk about how, you know, while most of our migration is within Colorado, you know, some of that is actually people who made a stop on the Front Range and they're like, time out, that's not the Colorado that I expected. There's a million people between me and the mountains, and then they come over here. And so we talk about that, too, because otherwise, that kind of gets lost, and it looks like, you know, it's just people from the Front Range moving over here. And, you know, we talk to them about how people will move from California and Texas by way of the Front Range, you know, over to Green.
Harrison, thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Sarah.
Yeah.
Let's talk numbers.
Absolutely. Just a couple updates from me besides kind of numbers. Also, I wanted to just call out that we met with the audit committee last week. I got a presentation from the audit team. Chris and Dan were there, as well as Tom Benton and Jennifer Landini, our community finance committee members. We went through just kind of preliminary findings, procedures, and all of those things. The audit firm is buttoning up the draft, which they got over to us. We're working on what's called the management discussion and analysis, which is really that first section, and it's more of a commentary, if you will, versus the check-the-box required footnotes. talking about why things were above or below budget. So we're working on that as well as tying out all of their numbers to make sure we agree with everything that they have in the report. And then our plan is to send that out to the full board. So you have a significant amount of time to review between now and the July meeting, and then those auditors will come back and do a presentation to the full board, and we will be recommending acceptance basically at the July meeting. So that's kind of our timeline and our plan. And Chris and Dan, I don't know if you guys had anything to add regarding the meeting or.
Yeah, Dan, did you?
Just, I thought it went very, they were very, had a lot of compliments on the finance.
Yep.
Very good job.
Thank you.
Great work.
Appreciate that. And thank you to Travis and Jennifer, they're a huge part of that as well. They dealt with me coming back and playing catch up a little bit last year, but I felt like we knew what we were going for this year and we were a lot faster. So, and then when it comes to numbers, we do have an update just for the May employment, although we have April financials. May again exceeded 41st consecutive month of growth. May by itself had 2,300 employments over May of 2025, so almost 8% year over year growth just in that month. And year to date through May, we're at 14% above our budget. So really excited just to see that continued growth as Harrison was talking about. For April, I apologize that I didn't get these kind of dashboard items into the packet. I would like to just call out to Jennifer, is still sitting over, I think, next door. Her and Travis were taking training with our accounting software. They've been playing around with some custom reports and custom dashboards, so we're hoping we can get something too that we're not doing manually every month, but trying to just push a button, run a report, and be able to get out to you guys. But what I did kind of put together, this corresponds to the full detailed packet we had. Our employments, I just mentioned, through May were 14. Through April, we were 12% ahead of budget, 11% over last year. Our operating revenue as well, we're exceeding budget about 4% through April. Our operating expenses are over budget right now. The majority of that is in that repair and maintenance category. And we've talked about this a couple months in a row, but we really have just had some big projects front loaded this year, which we haven't had in years past. We are monitoring that and keeping an eye on it. And I was meeting with Dylan yesterday, talking with Ben and his team about kind of what we have left. And as Angela mentioned, both planned projects as well as repairs, just to make sure we're monitoring that. Because right now we do have, we are behind as well as in our net operating income. Those expenses are exceeding budget by more than our revenue. Again, I do think some of that will catch up. The expenses are really straight lined throughout the month, but we are kind of digging into that detail and just making sure we are aware of that. So wanted to point that out. For capital expenditures, kind of in that bottom right corner, we have spent about 33% of the budgeted spend that we have for the year in projects funded just by ourselves and with our money. And on the grant funded side, we've actually spent about 31% of that. So that corresponds pretty well with how far we are through the year. So we're right on track for those budgeted amounts. At this point, I don't see any reason we would need to amend, but again, we'll monitor those projects progress. And I don't know if you guys had any questions about the detailed packet itself or other follow-up questions. But continued refinement from our team and hoping to get you guys something that's like a snapshot for you as well as the detail for those of you that want full. Did you have a question, Dan?
Nope.
Oh. And that's it for me. If you guys don't have anything else, I'll turn it over to Colin.
Colin, take it away.
Okay. There is a lot happening out here. Three action items today to approve new projects. I want to start with the runway, just a quick overview. As you may remember, the green work, sub-basin earthwork, that is scheduled to wrap up in the next 6 months, just minor items remaining. Last week, there was a notice of proceed issued for the Blue to United Companies. You also may remember we've got $40 million in grant money to start that project. We're anticipating a few more grants this summer. So a lot happening on the runway. In 2028, when we are scheduled to open, we're anticipating the green pavement being open. Just I'm going to try to show this more often just so it stays top of mind if you're asking questions about it in the community. Any questions on the runway? I think we talked about it a lot. Land side, we're working on design for the parking expansion. Met with the city, anticipating that to go to bid in the winter and construction begin in February and be completed by May. can't believe I didn't show a picture of the big awnings out front. Everyone probably saw them. There's a lot happening out there as well. That's scheduled to wrap up in September timeframe. We talked about a few of these items. These are Rebecca's slides that she sent over to me. Really, the main ones, Lance actually mentioned this one. This is the phase one shower upgrade. That's almost done. It's scheduled to wrap up in July, and then we'll be ready to start the next phase. I don't know if we've talked much in this meeting about landside signage and wayfinding. Gensler has been working on new signage and wayfinding, so that really directional signs, monument signs, and potentially an overhead entrance sign. We are working with Gensler and FCI to work on those and develop pricing for those. I've got an update at the end that talks about timelines for all of these things and board actions, but we've got a meeting this Friday that we'll get 50% in. On your walk in, you may have noticed that the canopy for the bus is gone. We're working with Gensler to get a fee together to develop plans for a new awning shown in blue. That is where all of the ride share is getting relocated to, so they're going to have a place to stay covered while they're waiting on ride share.
I have to say, it's not gone. We just moved it down, but
that's true.
I don't know if you noticed that walk is a lot easier now. I feel like the benches are gone, the shelter is moved, so it's a little more open in that walkway.
We actually walk on the sidewalk. When I have to park over there, because there's so much stuff on the sidewalk, I don't really walk in the road. It just felt all in the way.
And that big planter got removed?
Yeah, exactly. So just really trying to open up that line of sight and, you know, prepare for, you know, that permanent state where we have the commercial, all the commercial ground transportation in that loop. So we actually relocated the bus shelter down further so that, you know, it wasn't a visual obstruction again. It was kind of hard as we sit out there. It's hard to imagine walking past that if you're a passenger.
When is the bus being moved down to that other circle?
So we are no longer relocating it there for right now. Instead, you know, we are converting to a buyer class only stop with DVT. And so that was kind of the compromise, not compromise even, it was just kind of, you know, the optimized outcome that we were able to come to. So much like the Social Security Administration office, which is just down the road off H a little bit, that one you have to request to go to that stop. So as of, I think it's July 1st is when they're making that change. The GDT buses, they will not come down the terminal drive unless someone requests they do. So instead, they'll just turn at the roundabout, which is better for GDT, it's better for those passengers, and it's better for us. We want everyone who's coming down Walkerville Drive to be destined for the terminal deliberately, right? Not just passengers.
So the existing route actually does go what, down H Road or something like that?
So what it does, you know, the existing route today, it comes down, and chime in, Cody, if you have anything to add, but it comes down, goes through the roundabout at the end of Horizon, comes down Walkerville Drive, you know, goes back out and then turns left on H Road. If someone is requested to go to the Social Security office, it turns right on H Road to go down the other, you know, half a mile to a mile to go to that office. So in the future state, so starting in July, the bus will come to the roundabout at Horizon in Walkerville Drive, and it will only come down Walkerville Drive if someone requests to come to the airport. If someone doesn't request to come to the airport, but they request to go to the Social Security office, they'll actually come down around the roundabout and go down H Road instead of using basically Walkerville Drive as part of their just normal loop. So we're really excited about that outcome. And
did they have a count on how many were?
They had no count.
They had a few statistics, but I think it was still, it's not great data. I think they said maybe there was an average of 5 a day that got on, but we also know a couple of individuals who would come to the terminal multiple times during the day. So it's not necessarily an independent rider, it's not necessarily a passenger. And again, some of that's anecdotal just from what we've observed, but they do have a few counts, but I don't know that it's like I said, the best data.
And I think they're excited about, you know, this option and exploring this option elsewhere as well, because I think, you know, and just in working with them, it sounds like there are corridors where it would be great if they had higher frequency, but you still need to have access to these further reaching places. And so I think this represents the type of thing that we could see more of from GDC that would really, you know, just help them reach some of the goals they have. Cody, I don't know if you have anything else to add to that.
It makes the whole system more efficient. Your side or our side.
And they've been, you know, Andy has been a great partner as we worked through that, and yeah, we're excited about, you know, what he's doing.
Quick comment on that. So I'm a new board member for the Urban Trails.
Oh.
And had that this topic arise during our last meeting, and they talked just a little bit about that functionality of that and how that would work with GDT. And it was a great, and I said, hey, as an airport commissioner, I can tell you that collaboration and working with us is fantastic. That is really, that's how things should work. And rather than, obviously, it became a little adversarial with some of the advocates that step forward versus coming to it with a mindset of how we work together, which is ultimately where we got to, which is fantastic. So.
Yeah. Now, long term, do I think eventually we may, and especially if GDT is successful in their goals and, you know, more and more people use GDT for transportation to work, do I think that we'll end up relocating to that other bus stop? Probably. But because that better supports our entire ecosystem of workers, so that's just not really how it's utilized today. So, and I want to give kudos to Todd Hellenbeck too, because that's who stepped in and really helped, you know, come up with some of these ideas. Obviously, I think Todd was the original director of GDT. Is that right, Quinn? Because I think you were an original board member.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but just, you know, I want to make sure I give him credit, because I just think that something little like this, like the bus stop at the airport, doesn't feel really important when you look at the county as a whole, but he's just an incredible partner. And, you know, it's like, hey, how about these things? And, you know, what does this mean elsewhere too? And so I think it's just fun to be part of something that could spur other innovation and stuff. Thanks for asking about it.
Okay, last slide. We talked about how much is going on. In this slide shows these just so you can keep kind of the forward looking in front of you, because there's a lot of action for you guys in the near future. So this summer we're anticipating 2026 runway grants. Not sure exactly when those are. I think July from the latest from Todd, but we'll see, maybe August. We're anticipating the level 2 amenity grant acceptance later this summer. So as we talked about, we're going to finalize that over the next few weeks, and then that will follow up with a grant for us to bring forward for acceptance. Exterior signage construction contract, working through that, anticipating August to bring that to board. We're always hopeful for end of year grant money, primarily for the runway. That would happen likely in September if that happens this year. And then finally in September, that grant that's associated with those tower improvements we spoke of earlier, we would expect. Questions, comments?
I have a question that was actually earlier in your presentation. On the runway, when does we anticipate the paving will actually start?
I think the latest schedule, Austin, you chime in if you feel differently, but I think the actual asphalt paving would start early 27 is when they would start with the lower levels.
I was going to say, yeah, so probably mid 2027.
Because we awarded that a couple months ago, right?
We did, yeah. And we just issued the notice to proceed. So over the next few months, they'll start, you know, getting materials ready. They'll probably early start in earnest, I would guess, late fall, early winter.
They'll start beginning of August. So August 17th, we'll start mobilizing out there. They have a small portion that that this contractor won't be working anymore. Like Colin was showing earlier, they're going to be doing the base course first, and once they get that, then most likely, depending on the United plan, I imagine they'll try to get more base course along the entire runway, so we can start paving small strips. Stuff county-wise, over the 2026.
And what's the base course? What is that?
It's more of like block material. Okay.
And are we going to get a back wood work? Will there be a batch plant on the airport facility?
If we have a designated batch plant there, then we might almost likely use it.
And are they authorized to sell out of that batch plant for the project? Or is it committed strictly to our?
The idea of it would be fully committed to just the project.
Thank you.
The paving is highly regulated by the FAA when you use grant funding for it as well, and so, you know, the materials, like, there's a lot of specifications when it comes to airfield paving that have to be met, and so getting those materials, getting everything set up, and really being ready to start testing and then paving and give it massive.
Is the batch plant inside the secure area?
No, it's not inside the secure area. It's where it is. It's pretty much 27 and Quarter Road, between 27 and Quarter Road and the secure area. So there is fencing in there, the wooden wire fence.
I guess where I'm really going with this is there an opportunity for us to lease out that batch plant once this is done? I mean, it's going to be a pretty big project, but I think just mobilizing that,
yeah.
And maybe it's a lease opportunity for us to.
Oh, like potentially leasing it to United Companies?
Yeah, or whoever, just making it a, you know, public use batch plant. It would lease to a company that does that.
I think that's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Let me marry
it on. I think you understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's there, maybe we can get some more life out of it.
Colin, thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. I think that brings us to the end. Any other business
report of the board today? Quick comment. Spirit Engineering got some more. Got another front page article in Pilot Magazine. And there was a nice write-up about plying and Grand Junction in there. As part of that article, Spirit, the author came and flew one of their planes around the area. It's very complimentary of Grand Junction in there. A little bit of coverage.
Clint, do you think you can stop, talk Steve into coming and giving a presentation to the board in the fall?
Well, I'm sure he will.
Okay. Yeah, I think our board agenda is pretty full with project stuff and stuff, yeah. But I think it'd be fun for the board to get through that. Maybe September, because that way. Before there.
I'll probably be slow down in that.
Yeah, I think that's okay. I have two things. First, next month for the board meeting, I will be on our, you know, extended family's annual camping trip. So I plan to drive into town and call into the meeting, but I won't be here this week. And then second, we didn't talk about it here, but you know, the design is underway for our parking lot. Additional parking expansion, and you know, the ask enclosure, I didn't want to spend our time talking about the ask enclosure unless we had it, but the ask enclosure dates have been announced, so that's April 4th through November 19th of next year. We have been coordinating with the Aspen Airport and some of the other airports just on kind of how we can work together to make sure that we're meeting the community's needs during this time. So that coordination is underway. As well as coordinating with our tenants, especially folks like Westar, to make sure that they're prepared to take on additional traffic. You know, obviously the airline wanted to talk about that, and you know, we talked about passing as well, but that was not the main topic. So I wanted to make sure you're up to speed that those dates have been announced, and they are planning to report that their full runway project and then really lay the groundwork for their terminal expansion. They won't be building a new terminal next year, but they're planning to build a new terminal and an adjacent.
Great. All right. So, Angela, when you were when you mentioned fire and that prompted kind of something for me, and I think you and I may have talked offline a little bit about this at one point, but when we were out here, or when I was out here, when we were looking at the fire apparatus, comment came up from one of the team. An observation about hydrant placement being kind of a box, like R ends versus not having one in the middle, like a place to charge if they ever did need to recharge, especially in an emergency situation, to recharge one of the trucks with water. I just wanted to maybe flag that to where it might be part of the conversation as there's work being done, that maybe it would make sense to have a hydrant more centrally located.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And that's something, you know, we can talk to T about too. So the new fire chief Harris, you know, came from Charlotte, and the airport was part of his portfolio for much of the 30 years he was there. And so he brings with him a wealth of experience on the fire side. So, great.
One other quick thing also on related to first responders. I know we have a couple officers that are, or at least usually it seems like one officer is going to be stationed up here. I was just going to ask maybe how that was going and what the experience with them was. If we have, just from a city's perspective, I'd like to know. And if,
if we have adequate coverage, more of what that's looking like.
Things have been going great. I mean, it's been great to have them in the building and have consistency with officers. They can build those relationships, you know, their site of badge, they can go move around freely. You know, last week was a hard week weather-wise in aviation. You know, there are thunderstorms, as you know, all over the country. And so I was one of the people who got to sit waiting to depart for Denver in our boarding area on Monday. And so, you know, while we had 10 diversions on the ramp from Denver, and, you know, I bring up that example because, you know, the officer, without anyone needing to tell him to, he came over and just that presence, it really can just lower the temperature during stressful situations. And so, you know, from our perspective, things are going great, and, you know, we only have positive feedback.
Thank you.
So thanks for checking.
Yeah. Anything further? I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
And first and second. All in favor? Signal say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. We are adjourned. Thank you.
Yeah.
You guys are.